Over the days that followed, Manyoro hovered over the void. At times he lay in such a deep coma that Leon had to place his ear against his chest to listen for his breathing. At other times he gasped and writhed and shouted on his sleeping mat, sweating and grinding his teeth in fever. Lucima and Leon sat on each side of him, restraining him when he seemed in danger of injuring himself with his wild convulsions. The nights were long and neither slept. They talked quietly through the hours with the low fire between them. "I sense you were not born on some faraway island over the sea, as most of your compatriots were, but in this very Africa," Lucima said. Leon was no longer surprised by her uncanny perception. He did not reply at once, and she went on. "You were born far to the north, on the banks of a great river." "Yes," he said, "you are right. The place is Cairo, and the river is the Nile." "You belong to this land, and you will never leave it." "I had never thought to do so," he answered. She reached across and took his hand, closed her eyes, and was quiet for a while. "I see your mother," she said. "She is a woman of great understanding. The two of you are close in spirit. She did not want you to leave her." Leon's eyes filled with the dark shadows of regret. "I see your father also. It was because of him that you left." "He treated me like a child. He tried to force me to do things I did not want to do. I refused. We argued and made my mother unhappy." "What did he want you to do?" she asked, with the air of one who already knew the answer. "My father grabs after money. There is nothing else in his life, neither his wife nor his children. He is a hard man, and we do not like each other. I suppose I respect him, but I do not admire him. He wanted me to work with him, doing the things he does. It was a bleak prospect." "So, you ran away?" "I did not run. I walked." "What was it you sought?" she asked. He looked thoughtful. "Truly, I do not know, Lucima, Mama." "You have not found it?" she asked. He shook his head uncertainly. Then he thought of Verity O'Hearn. "Perhaps," he said. "Perhaps I have found someone." "No, not the woman you are thinking of. She is just one woman among many others." The question was out before he could check himself. "How do you know about her?" Then he answered himself, "Of course, you were there, and you know many things." She chuckled, and they were silent for a long while. It was a warm, comforting silence. He felt a strange bond with her, a closeness as though she were truly his mother. "I do not like what I am doing with my life now," he said at last. He had not thought about it until this moment, but as he said it, he knew it was the truth. "Because you are a soldier, you are not able to do what your heart tells you," she agreed. "You must do as the old men order." "You understand," he said. "I dislike hunting down and killing people I do not even know. Do you want me to point the way for you, Imbogo?" "I have come to trust you. I need your guidance." She was silent again for so long that he was about to speak. Then he saw that her eyes were wide open, but rolled back in her head so that in the firelight only the whites were exposed. She was rocking rhythmically on her haunches, and after a while she began to speak, but her voice had changed to a low, grating monotone. "There are two men. Neither is your father. But both will be more than your father," she said. "There is another road. You must follow the road of the great grey men who are not men." She drew a long, wheezing, asthmatic breath. "Learn the secret ways of the wild creatures, and other men will honour you for that knowledge and understanding. You will walk with mighty men of power, and they will count you their equal. There will be many women, but only one woman who will be many women. She will come to you from the clouds. Like them, she will show you many faces." She broke off and made a strangling noise at the back of her throat. With supernatural chill, he realized that she was in the struggles of divination. At last she shook herself violently and blinked. Her eyes rolled forward so that he could look into their dark centers as she focused on his face. "Hearken to what I told you, my son," she said softly. "The time for you to choose will soon be upon you." "I did not understand what you were telling me." "In time it will become clear to you," she assured him. "When you need me, I will always be here. I am not your mother, but I have become more than your mother." "You speak in riddles, Mama," he said, and she smiled a fond but enigmatic smile.